Hi everyone, my name is Lisa. I'm a recovered alcoholic. We'll see how this goes. My sobriety date is June 11th, 2012. My home group is a Southern Berkshire group. We meet every Friday night at 8 o'clock. We are hybrid, so both online and in person in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. I served District 3 in Area 31. As a GSR and a DCM, and that is where I gained my working knowledge of the traditions. And it's where I learned to have this love and respect and passion for our history and our literature. So I highly recommend getting involved in service to anyone here who is not already involved in service. My disclaimer is I do not speak for AA as a whole. I'm going to be citing a lot of our conference approved literature here, but I'm also going to be giving you, you know, my own thoughts and opinions, and I do not represent AA. And I also, you know, talk to me in 10 years, I'll probably change my mind on everything I say here tonight. So, because as we grow, we learn and we grow. Some of the literature that I used to get ready for this tonight was the Big Book. As Dee had mentioned, the tradition, the long form of the tradition, could be found on page 563. And AA Comes of Age. There's a lot of history in there. The 12 and 12, Language of the Heart, and then of course the pamphlet Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. So I have a confession. Prior to this, I've never read the pamphlet. And this is why I do these things, though, because what an amazing opportunity. And I would like to thank the literature committee for trusting me to do this tonight. And I read this pamphlet, and oh my gosh, what an amazing pamphlet. I'm going to be giving this to all my sponsees from now on. And I don't know how I missed this for all these years. So one of the things that I noticed about the pamphlet right off the bat was that it cites a lot of our literature. So there are a lot of quotes directly from our conference approved literature right in this pamphlet, which I thought was pretty cool. And there's also an incredible question and answer section at the end, and it answers pretty much any question that you could possibly have on this topic. So I thought that was really cool. So the pamphlet starts with the seventh tradition long form, which I was going to read. However, we already read that. So I won't reread it to you guys again, but I am going to talk a little bit about the long form, particularly the very first sentence in the long form. It says, "The AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members." So let's just take a minute to look at that, because there's a lot of words in that one sentence. And one of the first words that jumps out at me is voluntary, right? So we know that there are no dues or fees in AA. Nobody tells us how much money we have to give to be members of AA. So voluntary, meaning that this comes from our own desire to give, our own ability to have a sense of responsibility as members of AA to contribute. And then the next word, voluntary contributions, is contributions. Right. So when we look at the word contribute versus donation, right, in the outside world, I think outside of AA, those terms are used interchangeably pretty often. But here in AA, we really look at that word contribute as we are not taking anything from any outside entities. Only our own members contribute to AA. So then the next part of that sentence is of their own members. Now this sentence is talking about the groups, The groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. And then it says, we think each group should soon achieve this ideal. So when a group is new, a lot of times other members of AA from other groups will attend that group and put money in the basket. But the idea is that your group should only be supported by its own members. And this is something that I've only learned in the last couple of years. All of the groups I've ever was a member of prior to even this one I am a member of now, which still does this, but that's our group conscience. And that's a different, that's a story for another day. But we solicited our outside attendees. You know, my home group has 100 outside attendees, but we only have 30 or 40 members. So we're bringing in a lot of money in the hat because we're soliciting outside members. Now, being a member of my home group, we do pass that money on down the line. So at least I know we do that. But this is something that I recently just learned that I really, and I don't know a lot of groups that do this. I do know some. But I really feel strongly that we should be only contributing in our own home group's basket, and only our members should be contributing in our own home group's basket. So when I go to other meetings, if I have a cup of coffee, I might throw a dollar in the basket. I might not. I usually do if I have a cup of coffee, but I don't always have a cup of coffee. But my money, the majority of my money that I contribute goes to my home group. That's where I'm putting my money, is in my home group's basket. D, I wrote down here, no rabbit holes, and I've already gone down on one. So we'll see how this goes. It may be the weak link in this plan of mine. The next thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of contribute is we contribute money and we think of that, but we also contribute time, right? I think of service. I think of when I was only a few months sober and I didn't have a job, but I could make coffee. And so I made coffee at my home group. And when I also think of the word contribute, I think of it like, how do I relate that to my everyday life? So I contribute to my household bills. I contribute to the IRS. I contribute because I'm a contributing member of society, right? Like I contribute to a 401k. Like this is something that I'm contributing of myself for myself. Donate has a very different connotation to it, right? So I donate to the Red Cross. I donate, and I don't really, I'm just throwing out names because these are outside issues, but I'm just throwing out places where people donate, the SPCA or, you know, charities. People donate to charities, and we are not a charity. AA is not a charity, and I think that's why in AA, there is such an importance on these words. Contribute versus donate. I'm going to try not to go down another rabbit hole. So we're going to move on so when we talk about their own members, I also want to just touch briefly on what that means in terms of service. So, you know, who's doing service in your home group? Is it only your members doing service? How about your district? How about your area? You know, where are these people who are doing service in your district, members of your district in your area, and you know, so forth and so on. We also don't take money, right? So Area 31 doesn't take money from Area 30. except when we cooperate and we do a state convention, right? Then there's some, you know, money combining. But other than that, Area 31 is its own entity, and it does not take money from Area 30, which is the other area in my state. So the same with groups, right? We don't take money from other groups either. We are self-supporting. We don't take charity even within our own organization. So questions to ask that you can ask yourself are, who's contributing in your home group basket and who's doing service at your group, your district, and your area? AA members contribute to AA. And that is what makes us self-supporting. So I do want to talk a little bit about our history. I feel like with this tradition specifically, our history is really important because it really talks a lot about how we got here, how we got to the idea of self-supporting. So in the early years, we did in fact take outside donations. And I'm not going to read a ton of passages. I'm just going to give you guys some little snippets from AA Comes of Age, and I won't rob you of the experience of reading this book for yourselves. So in 1938, in the beginning of the book, there's sort of like a timeline, and it gives you sort of like the timeline of our history. So in 1938, John D. Rockefeller Jr. Gives $5,000 and refuses to give more, which saves AA from professionalism. And you can read in pages 147 to 151 this story in more detail. The Alcoholic Foundation establishes a trusteeship for AA. And what this did, right, so this made it so that people could send in donations, right? This is important, not contributions, donations from outside entities. And then it can be tax deductible. So that is how we were set up in 1938. And then also one of the large donations that we took, which actually was a loan and we paid it back, but was Mr. Charles B. Towns loaned us $2,500, and then that later that became $4,000 for the writing of the big book. So these are ways in which we took money, and I don't ever want to imply or I don't ever want to say that we are not grateful for the help that we received from these outside people. Like, AA is where it is today because of the help that we received from non-alcoholics. And I never want to diminish that. But those people, John D. Rockefeller in particular, really taught us that we needed to be self-supported, that this was a bad idea. And so if we look back at Tradition 7, the long form, it says that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatsoever is unwise. Right? So the word dangerous sort of stands out to me there. Like, that's a big deal, right? Danger and unwise, right? So this tradition is telling us, hey, this is not a good idea. And they learned that through their own mistakes. They learned these things by the course of actions that they took. And then they were able to put these traditions down in writing and pass it on so that we could continue to keep AA safe for future generations. So why is it dangerous? So I'm going to get into Tradition 6 just for a minute, really briefly here. And I'm going to go ahead and read. Tradition 6 is pretty long. I'm just going to read the short form. I like the long form of the traditions better, but for time's sake, I'm just going to read the short form. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the name AA to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. So what is the danger? The danger is us being diverted from our primary purpose. And these are the lessons that they learned throughout the history. Is they, you know, I think there was talk of having a big hospital with many floors and, you know, all kinds of grandiose ideas that they were going to do with all this money. And it wasn't until they realized that in order to keep AA safe, they had to stick true to the singleness of purpose of what we do here. And in AA Comes of Age, something I also recently discovered, I've read the book and I guess I just never noticed it before, that Tradition 6 and Tradition 7 are one long thing in the book. So it's not separated. All the other traditions are separated at the beginning. And that tradition runs right 1-6 right into 7, kind of like 8 and 9 in the big book, right? So they're very tied together. It's very important that we understand why we're self-supporting. So if we go and we also look at, so Tradition 6 kind of ends and Tradition 7 sort of begins around pages 110, 111 in AA Comes of Age. And it talks about on pages, those pages, it talks about how we got the idea of corporate poverty from the philosophy of St. Francis Assisi. Right. So this idea, what is corporate poverty? Right. So this is the idea we keep our prudent reserves prudent. And if you want to know what that means, prudent reserve, you can look at the back of the pamphlet and there's a question and answer and it will tell you what that means back there. And so this idea that we had about corporate poverty came from St. Francis, but we didn't implement it. So we had the idea. We said, hey, we like that idea. And then we continued to solicit for outside donations. And then it was actually, I believe, Rockefeller who said, you know, money's really going to louse this thing up. And so basically he wouldn't give us any more money. So it was sort of forced on us a little bit, but we did eventually realize, you know what, he's right. We saw that the affiliation was going to be our detriment, and I'm gonna skip around here for a minute. And so what happened is in 1954 we changed our name from the Alcoholic Foundation to the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the original idea of this all-purpose foundation was abandoned. And that's really when we embraced this principle of self-support, right? That's when we said, we changed our name. We took foundation out of our name because it implied a charity. And we didn't want to even imply that we were a charity, so we changed our name. And that's what I look at, too, when I think of the idea of contribution versus donation, right? We don't want to use the word donation because we don't even want to imply that we accept donations. So what happened after we wrote the traditions, wrote this one specifically, was a woman. In this story, you can find the story in Language of the Heart, AA Comes of Age, and the 12 and 12. It's in all of those places. So it must be a very important story. So there's this woman who was going to leave $10,000 in her will. And this came to AA at a time when we were desperately in need of money. And after much talk, and I think we were still the AA Foundation at the time even. We hadn't changed the name yet. But there was much talk back and forth about taking the money and not taking the money. And so I'm going to, this is where I am going to read something out of AA Comes of Age. So on page 113, I'll just read to you what it says here about this, the situation that came up. Compared to this prospect, the $10,000 under consideration was not much. But like the alcoholic's first drink, it would, if taken, inevitably set up a disastrous chain reaction. Where would that land us? Whoever pays the piper is apt to call the tune. And if the AA Foundation obtained money from outside sources, its trustees might be tempted to run things without reference to the wishes of AA as a whole. Every alcoholic feeling relieved of responsibility would shrug and say, oh, the foundation is wealthy. Why should I bother? The pressure of that fat treasury would surely tempt the board to invent all kinds of schemes to do good with such funds and so divert AA from its primary purpose. So they decided not to take the money. And this is really important because of our service structure. So that line about whoever pays the piper is apt to call the tune, that's really important because our groups are at the top of the triangle. And then General Service Board is at the bottom of the triangle. And we always want to keep the groups in charge. And the only way we can keep the groups in charge at the top of the triangle is by making sure that they are the piper. They are paying the bill. Because if down here at the bottom of the triangle, the General Service Board is getting all this money and it's not coming from the groups, then why do they need to listen to the groups? And so in order to keep the triangle from flipping, we have to make sure that we keep the groups at the top of the triangle and that they are the ones paying the money and it's not coming from outside sources. Not just outside sources, inside sources. We even have limitations. So we have a $5,000 limit on an individual contribution. I think that's an annual, so you can get $5,000 every year if you want, but that's our limit. And then I think it's $10,000 for bequests and wills. And that's also can be found in the back of the pamphlet as well under the question and answer section. And that's why we have that. Because if we had one person, if we had a Rockefeller in AA who said, I'll give you $1 million, all of a sudden, who's calling the two? Who's the piper, right? Like, who's in charge? All of a sudden, that one person could decide that they have all kinds of ideas about what we should do with the money they gave. So that's why that's really important. Interesting. I thought I was going to run out of time, but I'm going a little faster than I thought I was going here. So anyway, so that's what happened with that story. And so that's why we have the limitations on the bequests and the individual contributions. And something else that was interesting that came up for me. So while I was preparing for this, I had reached out to a friend of mine who's past trustee. And I said, hey, you know, is there anywhere in our literature that says, you know, other than our history, right? Like other than reading this entire book, that says why we don't use the word donation and why we use the word contribution. And he is amazing. Immediately, sent me a message and said that in 2006, there was an advisory action from the Finance Committee that stated the word donation be replaced with the word contribution in AAWS literature as it comes up for reprint. So we, our fellowship as a whole at the conference, right? That's what the conference is. It's the conscience of the fellowship as a whole has decided, and they decided in 2006 that it was really important. It's really important that we use the word contribution versus the word donation, and that we have our literature reflect that by changing it as it comes up for reprint. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. I didn't know that. I have learned so much from doing this tonight. And, you know, that's why I say get involved. If you're not involved, get involved. I learn by doing, right? So sitting and reading, it's great. It's wonderful. I learn a lot of information, but I learn from doing, from jumping in and doing the doing. That's how I learn. And, you know, I've read things in preparing for this that I've never read before. And it's definitely a great way to get involved in general service. So back to the pamphlet. So on page 5 of the pamphlet, where money and spirituality mix, there's a little excerpt. So on page 5, it says, "We cannot skimp." And this really speaks to the principle of responsibility. And this is taken right out of Language of the Heart. And I'm actually going to read it out of Language of the Heart. A little bit easier to see than the pamphlet on my phone. So I'm going to read this because I think this, I saw this and I was like, wow, that's really, that really speaks to my heart, right? That really speaks the language of the heart to me. To conclude, our spiritual way of life is safe for future generations if, as a society, we resist the temptation to receive money from the outside world. But this leaves us with a responsibility, one that every member ought to understand. We cannot skimp when the treasure of our group passes the hat. Our groups, our areas, and AA as a whole will not function unless our services are sufficient and their bills are paid. When we meet and defeat the temptation to take large gifts, we are only being prudent. But when we are generous with the half, we give a token that we are grateful for our blessings and evidence that we are eager to share what we have found with all those who still suffer. I just thought that was a really nice little excerpt about why we're, you know, it's our responsibility. It's our responsibility as members of our groups to put money in the hat. And then it's our group's responsibility that once we've paid rent, bought coffee, whatever we do, buy pamphlets, buy literature, whatever our groups do with our money, and that's up to each group. Each group can decide how it wants to spend its money. And then we put, you know, whatever the prudent reserve is. So for some groups, that might be, you know, 3 months or 6 months of expenses. And after that, that money then gets passed on down the triangle, right? It gets sent to our districts and our areas and our institution committees so that they can buy literature and bring it into institutions, and our inner groups and central offices, and they have bills to pay, and, you know, GSO, the General Service Board, not the General Service Office, but the General Service Board is who we send our contributions to. It's our group's responsibility to do that. And if you look in the pamphlet, at the very end, after the questions and answers, they have a little pie chart there. And it's interesting because I remember when I first became a GSR, so we have an area handbook. And in the area handbook, we have a pie chart in there. And if I remember correctly, there's just one pie chart, one suggested pie chart. Here, at least they have a couple options. And it says across the sample, which is really good because then that's clear. So I remember when I was a new GSR, I thought, we're supposed to do this. This is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to send 10% here and 20% there and 30% here. And it wasn't until I'd been in service for a little while and right before I became the DCM that I actually realized, no, this is not what we're supposed to do. Nobody is supposed to tell the groups how to spend their money. That is up to each individual group. Now, having said that, having served at the district and the area, I would say it's best to check with your local districts and areas and even check with GSO and see who needs the money and change it accordingly. So something that was unique that happened in my area, actually, I don't think it was unique to my area, but something that happened in my area was when the pandemic hit, we no longer were paying rent. Our building that we were renting, they, since we weren't using it, they said they weren't going to charge us any money. We didn't have to spend money to send our area officers to NARASA, the Northeastern Regional Service Assembly. So we didn't have to, and that's a lot of money. We also, there was another really large expense that I can't think off the top of my head right now. So we were sitting on like $20,000 and then $30,000 because groups were just continuing to send their money as they always have. And we're not spending any, like we're spending like $100 a month on Zoom or something. Like that's all we were spending. And the money was just coming in and coming in. So as DCM, I went back to the groups and I said, hey, listen, maybe go back to your groups and discuss changing how you're distributing the money, because there's a lot of money accumulating over here that's not needed. And maybe GSO, maybe the General Service Board, maybe they need money. Maybe we need to check in there. Or what we did find in my district was we have our own intergroup office in my district, and that intergroup was in the red. So their expenses went up because when the pandemic hit, their phone hotline expense went through the roof. And so what happened was a lot of the groups, then they switched it and they stopped sending money to area, or they lowered the amount they were sending to area, and they started sending more money to the intergroup. And the intergroup got out of the red and they were doing really well and they were really healthy. And then they started, once we were able to go back in person, they started putting on events and using all this money that they were sending. And now, so then after that, what happened was the groups went back to the original pie chart, because then our area went back to their building and then they started to have to pay rent. So they went back to distributing it the way they were distributing it before. And now again, once again, our intergroup office is in the red and has been in the red for 6 months. So the best way to know how to do this chart here, that they have this pie chart, is to have your general service representative and your intergroup representative tell you who needs the money. And that's something that you got, that groups really, like I've experienced since, maybe not before the pandemic, but since the pandemic, I've experienced that we really need to look at that like every 3 to 6 months. Not once a year, like every 3 to 6 months, because it seems to be changing a lot more. It's fluctuating a lot more than it did before. So how am I doing at time? More time to fill. Okay. So I don't have a whole lot more to say on this topic, but let's go back to the long form. I'm sure I can find more to talk about. So when we look at the long form, the next sentence says, then too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries, which continue beyond prudent reserves, to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. So that happened as well in my area. Disputes. Disputes over property, money, and authority. Oh boy, I don't know how much I should go into it. So without going into too many details about how challenging it was, I will just say it was very challenging. So we were sitting on all this money and nobody could agree what we were supposed to do with it. This group of people wanted to send it to the General Service Board. This group of people over here wanted to spend it on technology. This group of people over here thought, no, we should just sit on it because what's going to happen when we do have to, we had to move. So the building that we were renting from sold and we had to find a new place and we didn't know how much it was going to, you know, rent was going to be. And so people who were very fearful about money were like, don't do anything with the money until we know what's going on. And there was a lot, I feel like we spent so many hours of time just discussing what are we going to do with all this money. And there was a lot of animosity and I'm from a very small area where area committee meetings are fun. They're fun and they're exciting. And even when we disagree, we all go out and have dinner afterwards. And this created a problem. So this warning in this part is, you know, I got to see how that really does unfold. And so it is important. And that is why we have corporate poverty. And that is why we have such prudent reserves, is so that we're not fighting over what we're going to do with all that money. And which essentially diverts us from our primary purpose. Because instead of talking about how we're going to help the next sick and suffering alcoholic, we're spending hours talking about what are we going to do with $20,000. So not a great use of my time, in my opinion. But that is what we did. And I think I want to read one more part out of AA Comes of Age. So I really like, when we talk about responsibility, I really like this last paragraph on page 114 and in Tradition 7, where it says, all right, so actually I'll read the paragraph before, because it's talking about the $10,000 gift. And then they're talking about a newspaper who did an article. Then our trustees wrote a bright page of AA history. They declared for the principle that AA must always stay poor. Reasonable running expenses plus a prudent reserve would henceforth be the foundation's financial policy. Regardless of current needs, the trustees officially declined that $10,000 and adopted a formal airtight resolution that all such future gifts would be similarly declined. At that moment, the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA tradition. When the newspapers got a hold of these facts, there was a profound reaction. To people familiar with endless drives for charitable funds, AA presented a strange and refreshing spectacle. Approving editorials here and abroad generated a great new wave of confidence in the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. They pointed out that irresponsible had become responsible, and that by making financial independence part of its tradition, Alcoholics Anonymous had revived an ideal that this era had almost forgotten, This is why AA's Tradition 7 now reads, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions.